We're going to look at a little bit of a larger section of Genesis tonight. Chapter 27 is a little bit longer, but I wanted to do that chapter in connection with Genesis 28 because it provides us a contrast. It gives us a picture of the house of man and the messes that man makes within just their home environment and the house of God. And Genesis 28 is going to be talking about how Jacob meets God at Bethel, or probably more accurately, how God meets Jacob at Bethel, and Jacob names the place Bethel, which means house of God. And so we're going to see this juxtaposition or this contrast between just this mess that man has made and God entering this mess and still being with man and saying, I'm with you, I'm for you, I'm going to work through your problems, your mistakes, your shortcomings, your failures. And I think Genesis is amazing because the second half of the book is looking at, in a sense, the family of God. And when you see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and then Joseph, most of these guys largely have just imperfect lives. That there are major things going on in their lives that are somewhat problematic, and yet God is for them, God's with them, and God's working through that. So we are looking at the life of Jacob. We're going to be transitioning from from Isaac tonight, to looking more at Jacob, the third patriarch, the father of the Jewish family. And you could summarize this section in three words. We're going to see a chase after a blessing. We're going to see this division in the family. We're going to see Isaac and his son Esau are pursuing, trying to get the blessing for Esau. And we're going to see Rebecca and Jacob on the other side pursuing the blessing for Jacob. So there's this family competition. And rather than being all on the same page, all on the same team, collaborating and working together, it's like they're playing a big game of family chess. Only it's not really a friendly competition game. It's them really trying to go behind one another's back. They're both cheating. Both sides are being secret and undercutting one another. And we're going to see at the end of the day, God wins in his plan. And half of the team does win in a sense, but they also experience, because they cheated, long-term consequences in their life. So humanity loses. God wins. But God's going to work within just the choices that humanity makes. So the chase after the blessing is the first part. Then we're going to see a chill, in a sense, that descends on the family because of this strife. And then we're going to see, in a sense, church. We're going to see God enter the scene, and we're going to see the house of God in the midst of this mess. So let's look at the chase first. We're going to see verses 1 through 40, which is the characters all competing for this blessing. And we'll look at Isaac, Esau, Rebecca, and Jacob in different qualities and characteristics, poor characteristics of their life. So let's begin by looking at verse 1 here. It says, now it came to pass when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau, his older son, and he said to him, my son. And he answered him, here I am. And he said, behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. Now what Isaac is doing here is not just wanting to have a good meal with his son Esau and bless him as well as Jacob in different ways, but he's really wanting to confer upon Esau something that God has reserved for Jacob. Before these children were ever born, God said that the older was going to serve the younger, and that God had arranged, just like Isaac was to receive the blessing, though Ishmael was older, Jacob was going to receive the blessing, though Esau was older. And so Isaac here is trying to undercut God's plan. And he's trying to go against the plan of God and the promise of God and the prophecy of God. My Bible says the title for this chapter is Isaac Blesses Jacob, which is absolutely true, but it's not exactly what he was trying to do. I think the title probably should say Isaac tries to bless Esau, and then he ends up blessing Jacob, but he doesn't know it until later. So the first point that I'd like to bring out regarding Isaac, we're going to see in each of these individuals, characteristics of the house of man. First quality, or poor quality, is Isaac's haste here. I think he's jumping rather than waiting and trusting. It says he's old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see. And he brings his son to him and he sees a need to bless before he dies. But I think he's trying to rush at it. He's not doing this with the family. He's pulling Esau in during this time when this should have been a family gathering. And just Esau's there and he's telling Esau, I'm getting old. And I don't want to miss this opportunity to bless you before I die. And Isaac is old. He's at least 100. We know that he was 60 when he had his twins. And Esau married at the age of 40. He married two women in the previous chapter. So Isaac's at least 100. We know that Isaac dies at 180. So if he's at a minimum of 100, he still has almost half of his life left. So it'd be like a person who's, you know, 40 saying, I'm old, and they feel like they've got one foot in the grave, and they're going to live to actually be, you know, 75 or 80 years old. And it's he's older, but he's not kicking the bucket yet. He's not that old yet, though he feels like he's old. He can't see, so he does have some physical problems, but he's not as old as he thinks he is. And so there's this haste. There's this distrust in God's timing, I think, in his life. And we see not only this haste, but we see this obstinance. He knows God has said Jacob's going to receive the blessing, but he's trying to force God. And one person said rightly that when we resist God, we force God to have to resist us. And that's what the Lord is going to have to do here. He's going to, in a sense, have to push against what Isaac is doing because Isaac is pushing against him. And so we see this obstinance. And it's sad because this is the same man who in Genesis chapter 22 walked the hill with his dad and laid himself on the altar and said, I am willing to trust God. I'm willing to, even when I don't understand everything, lay my life on the line and trust the Lord. This is the same man who in Genesis chapter 24 trusted his dad with the decision of who was going to be his spouse. And he allowed his dad to send a servant, a trusted servant, to a far land and find a spouse for him. And here we see him walking away from trusting in the Lord. And it's a reminder to me that I need to be careful to not become casual in my relationship with God. I can walk for 20 or 30 years well with the Lord and then drift. And that's what Isaac has done here. He's not finishing well at this time. We're going to see at the end of the chapter, by the end, he consents to God's sovereignty. He recognizes that and he doesn't try to change it. But right here, he is trying to push. So this is another just poor quality of humanity, is just obstructing and resisting God. And then the third poor quality of Isaac here is there's an uneasiness about him. And whenever somebody's pushing against God, there should be this unrest in our soul. And all the way through this, Isaac is uncertain. If you look at verse 18, so he, this is speaking of Jacob, he went to his father and he said, my father. And he said, here am I. Who are you, my son? And then in verse 20, but Isaac said to his son, how is it that you found it so quickly, my son? And then if you look at verse 21, then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether or not you're really my son Esau. There's an uncertainty about this. Verse 22. Isaac says, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. If you jump to verse 24. Then he said, are you really my son Esau? Jacob said, I am. And verse 25 and 26. He said, bring it near, and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you. And he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father said to him, come near now and kiss me, my son. And then he smelled the smell that he thought was Esau. Jacob was wearing Esau's clothes, and so he smelled like his brother, an outdoorsman. But all the way through this, there is this unsureness about Isaac as he's taking these steps. And when we are resisting God, that's what we're going to experience in life, this uneasiness in life. There's a verse in the New Testament, Colossians 3, verse 15, where Paul writes about different qualities that we as a Christian should have. And he says in verse 15, let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you are called in one body, and be thankful. The word for rule could also mean, in a sense, referee. That the peace of God is supposed to help us know when we are staying within the boundaries of God. And when we step out of the boundaries, it's like a referee blowing the whistle, telling you, you're stepping away from where you should be. It's like soccer when you get the yellow card, and it's a warning, watch out what you're doing after this, because you've violated the rules and the policies of the game. And here, Jacob, or Isaac, is receiving, in a sense, the yellow card from God. He's saying, watch out. And he continues to push against it. And God is going to overstep his plans. But there's this uneasiness. Then we jump to Esau. What are some things that we see about him? In verse 4, it says, make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. So he goes out. And what does he know as a son? He knows what his dad knows, that this is something that isn't really mine. God has promised to give it to Jacob. And so there's, in a sense, a theft here. He thinks this is mine to claim, because I'm the firstborn, but it's not really his. And so there's a striving. And there's a verse in Proverbs. If you want to jump over to Proverbs 19, verse 17, or Proverbs 9, verse 17. This is a different context where this word verse is being spoken, but I think the principle still applies. It's said here that stolen water is sweet, and that bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But it's not really true. It's the claim of those who are doing something wrong and immoral, but you're having to hide. And here, Esau is trying to get something that is stolen water. It's bread eaten in secret. He's trying to get the blessing, but there's not the ability to actually really enjoy it the way God would have intended if everything was above board. And so he's experiencing and practicing theft here, trying to take something that doesn't belong to him. And then there's also going to be hatred in his life after this, because he loses something that he feels he should have had, and he hates his brother for it, which we'll get to a little bit later. How about Rebekah? Jump to verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, bring me game and make me savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death. She must be a really good cook. Because Esau's supposed to go get game and venison. And she's saying, I'm going to take a goat and I'm going to make it taste like game and venison. And so she's deceiving, but she's also eavesdropping here. And I'm sure I'm not the only one in this room who's ever eavesdropped on another conversation. But what are the contexts for why people eavesdrop? What was that?
Nosy.
Sometimes people are just nosy. They want to get into other people's business. I think as a kid growing up, you know, when I was in our bedroom, it was right next to the kind of the den or the, we called it the rec room, where my parents would sometimes hang out, you know, after we all went to bed. And you could be right next to the wall and hear some of the conversation. And sometimes the reason why you would eavesdrop in life is simply because of curiosity. You're curious what they're talking about. There are times, though, where I think there's a sadder reason why people eavesdrop, and that is because of a concern that has arisen. It's because of a distrust that has broken in the relationship. And so you're eavesdropping on maybe voicemails or texts. You go to somebody else's phone and you're checking their texts or an email or some, maybe it's the history of a person searching on a computer, you know, just different ways of being not just curious, but concerned about somebody else's life. And here, I think part of the reason why Rebecca is eavesdropping on this conversation is because there's been a lack of communication between her and her husband. There isn't the closeness that there used to be years ago. And so she is listening at the door because there hasn't been that fellowship. And it's a sad aspect here. But it's an aspect of, in a sense, that just describes, again, the house of man. And there are times where we should keep our ear away from the door. And that we shouldn't step into somebody else's conversation, even if we're curious. But there are times where maybe we are doing that because we are concerned, because we're afraid, probably like what Rebecca was doing. And she's aware, my husband is trying to do something that's not in line with the Lord. And so rather than resorting to other options that would be legitimate, she resorts to scheming, just taking matters into her own hands. What could she have done in this situation besides going to Jacob and saying, we're going to play a better chess match here in this whole scheming than Isaac and Esau? What are some other things that she could have done that we do not see her doing here? Yeah, she could have gone to her husband and said, hey, I know I probably shouldn't have had my ear at the door, but I did. And I hear what you're planning to do. And this is going against what the Lord said. She does not talk to her husband about it. And that's unfortunate. I think she should have and could have done that. She probably felt, I can't do that because there's a breakdown in our communication right now. But even if there was a breakdown in their communication, there was something else she could have done. And that was talk to the Lord about it. And it's amazing that when you look at this chapter, the Lord is mentioned in the blessing that Isaac gives to Jacob. But God is not mentioned really anywhere else. There's no mention of Isaac or Esau or Jacob or Rebecca praying to God in this entire conversation and chapter. And it's sad because you've got here the family of God. This is not an unbelieving house. This is a believing house, but you see them not really walking in belief here, not following the Lord well. So we move from Rebecca to looking at Jacob and some of the qualities or poor qualities in his life. If you look at verse 11, Jacob said to Rebecca, his mother, look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man. And I am a smooth-skinned man. If he was living today, he'd probably say, you know, he looks like Chewbacca. And there's no way that my dad is going to think that I am Esau if I walk in and he asks me to come close to him, even if I try to fake his voice. which I may try to do well, but it's going to probably not come out perfect. And so he is afraid. He's saying there is a huge contrast in just how we appear. Verse 12, perhaps my father will feel me. And look at this word. And I shall seem to be a deceiver to him. He inserts a word here that's not necessary. He's not just seeming to be a deceiver. He will be a deceiver. But he's downplaying his sin. And I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing. But his mother said to him, let your curse be on me. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me. And he went down and got them and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hands, on the smooth part of his neck. Now, if you've ever petted a goat, you know they do not have smooth hair and very coarse. And so Esau certainly was probably like Chewbacca or something here, where they had to put the skins on his hands. Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and he said, my father. And he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? We're going to see what Jacob says here in a little bit. But the first unfortunate quality that we have of Jacob here is, an anxiety in his life and a downplaying of his sin. He says, I shall seem to be a deceiver. So there's not this comfort level as he's moving forward. There's this sin and this anxiousness that's connected with it. And then we see his response to his dad. Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn, which is an outright lie. I have done just as you told me, which is another lie. Please arise, sit and eat my game, which is a lie, that your soul may bless me. And Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord your God brought it to me, which he could probably try to couch as a truth, but is still a lie. You see, he can't just lie once. Whenever we start to lie, we have to use other lies to cover up those lies. And it's so much easier just in life, even when it's hard, to tell the truth, because we don't have to keep covering it up. We can just say one thing, and it's consistent. It's true. Then Isaac said to Jacob, verse 21, please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him. And he said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. Then he said, are you really my son Esau? And he said, I am. And he said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you. So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, come now near and kiss me, my son. And he came near and he kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing, and he blessed him and said. Before we read this blessing, what should have been the experience for Jacob in this whole situation? I think there should have been just a great joy of getting to experience this and take part in it. This is a legitimate thing that God was giving to him, but he's doing it in an illegitimate way. And sometimes in life, there are good things that God has reserved for us, blessings that he's given to us. But when we partake of them in the wrong way, we don't get to actually enjoy those moments or those experiences as God would have really intended. And so here, he gets the blessing, but he doesn't get the joy that should have been connected with the blessing. Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field, which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine, which in today's context would just simply be, may God prosper you. Verse 29, let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. So there's an authority that he's going to bless them with, that he will be the head and not the tail, in a sense. And then cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. In other words, a security about his life. That if anyone's against you, God will be against that person. If anyone's for you, God will overflow those blessings upon them. Verse 30. Then it happened as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also made savory food, and he brought it to his father, and he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat his son's game, that your soul may bless me." And his father said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Isaac trembled exceedingly. He's face to face with the sovereignty of God, and he realizes what God had just allowed to have happen. And he said, "Who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate of all of it before you came, and I have indeed blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed." See, Isaac realizes right here, I can't go against God. And he doesn't try to just negate and cancel out what had happened. He realizes God has had his way, and Jacob is blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry, and he said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing." And Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted or deceived me these two times. He took away my birthright," which is revisionist history. He gave away his birthright. It wasn't stolen. He traded it. "And now look, he has taken away my blessing," which it wasn't really his. It was something that God had promised to Jacob. "And he said, 'Have you not reserved a blessing for me?' Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, 'Indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for my son?' And Esau said to his father, 'Have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father.' And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, 'Behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass when you become restless that you shall break his yoke from your neck.'" So he won't always serve Jacob. Jacob, there will be a time when the Edomites will break away from the Israelites. But there will be a season where they will be subservient to them. Verse 41. Or actually, before we get there, that's the next section. So we have here just a sad story, a low point in the family of Israel. And this story reminds me of just kind of a policy that my wife and I have with our kids and with one another. We talk to our kids about, in our family, we don't want to have any secrets. And part of that is to protect them for if, you know, down the road, if there's people that want to come to them and say, "Hey, are you able to keep a secret?" We want to make sure that they understand that there's no secrets in our family, that we want to be open with one another and honest with one another with what's going on. But we do have surprises. So, you know, as Christmas is coming around the corner, we'll have different things that are surprises, which are healthy, but not secrets, which can be unhealthy to have within a family. And in this family, there are a lot of secrets. But these secrets aren't surprises. It's an unhealthy aspect to this family. It's not a unity. They're playing chess. They're maneuvering not on the same team, but against one another. In a sense, it's like an offense and a defense on the same team competing against one another in the same game when they should be complementing one another. And God wasn't just rejecting Esau. He just had a different plan for Esau. And God had chosen Jacob for this particular plan. And so they're not cooperating with this. There's this competition rather than a cooperation. A few different points and then we'll move on. We can't outmaneuver God. If you're going to play chess against God, he's going to win every single time. Even when we think that we've got some good moves. And Isaac recognizes that toward the end, and he respects that, but it took him a while. Another point that we can see in this chapter is not everything that works is right. Rebekah and Jacob's plan works, but it's not right. And just because sometimes the means bring us to the end doesn't mean that it justifies the means. And we never really get to see what God would have done if they had waited, if they had trusted rather than manipulated. Another point that I see here in this chapter is that the followers of God don't always follow well. And this is, in a sense, the hallmark family. This is the poster child of those who are supposed to be, you know, with God, following God, and they are not really a good picture. And you could take a snapshot of probably any family in this room, and you're going to see seasons and times where our families are like Jacob and Esau and Isaac and Rebekah, where there's an imperfection. We are the family of God, but we're not following perfectly or very well at all in different seasons. Yet God is still with them. God is still for them. He's working in this family. So let's move to the next section, this chill that descends on the family. Verse 41. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." So he's comforting himself in this hostility that when dad's dead, I'm going to take out revenge. Verse 42. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away." Those few days are going to be 20 years, and she has no clue. She doesn't know that she will never see her son again when she sends him away. "Until your brother's anger turns away and he forgets what you have done to him, then I will send and bring him from there. Why should I be bereaved of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, like these who are daughters of the land, what good is my life? What good will my life be to me?" Then Isaac called Jacob, and he blessed him, and he charged him, and he said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and that you may be an assembly of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you're a stranger, which God gave to Abraham." So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. So you see here, even now, this family isn't being honest with one another. Rebekah comes up with another plan to disguise why Jacob should be sent away. It's for his safety, but she's saying, "Let him go find a spouse over there." And so Isaac cooperates with that, and they do. But there's this chill. There's this descent of just a coldness that is over the family and a sadness. And it's unfortunate to see Esau's response here. There's a bitterness to his life, and we're not going to look at the verses because of this, for sake of time, but you could note down Hebrews 12, verses 11 through 17. In the last chapter, basically, God was disciplining Esau and correcting him, letting him know this is not your blessing. But he is responding with this bitterness and this frustration, and he's not responding well. He doesn't see his place as second here. And he's and rather than accepting his place, he's trying to displace his brother so that he can get it for himself. So jump down to verse 6. Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, and he sent him away to Paddan Aram to take himself a wife from there. And that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. Also, Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not bless his father Isaac or please his father Isaac. So he's looking at the situation. He sees Jacob's going to get a wife. It's not one of the people of the land. I've married some of the people of the land. Maybe my parents are displeased with my wives because they're locals and they're not family. So he processes in his mind, maybe I need to get a spouse that's related, you know, to the family. So Esau, verse 9, took Ishmael, went to Ishmael, and he took Mahalalel, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. So rather than correcting his problem, realizing I shouldn't have married two women, and I shouldn't have married unbelieving women, he adds a third part of the problem. So he still does not get it. He's just confused and is not walking in God's ways. And then we see this beautiful section of God coming to Jacob on the way to Bethel, or on the way to Haran. Verse 10. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went to Haran. So he came to a certain place and he stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and he put it at his head and he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed. And behold, a ladder was set up on the earth and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and I will keep you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until you have done what I have spoken to you. Now, if you're the Lord here, what dream would you have given to Jacob that night? Probably not this dream, if you know we're thinking in our mindset. But this is a gracious dream. He comes to Jacob, and he brings a ladder saying, I'm not putting you on probation. I am coming to you. I am with you, and I am for you. And Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid, and he said, how awesome is this place? And this is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put at his head, and he set it up as a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, which means house of God. But the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. And so Jacob is amazed. Some people think verse 20, the word if means he's making a bargain with God. In other words, he still doesn't really understand God. He's still bargaining with him. Other people think the word if can mean since. Since you will be with me, this will be my response to you. Jacob does have growth in his life that needs to take place, but we do see God is for him. God's with him. And I love, we'll wrap up with a couple verses. Turn over to Psalm 46, verse 11. Psalm 46, verse 11. This is a psalm that is describing God's presence with his people. And it ends with this verse: "The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah." Now, years later, Jacob receives another name, Israel, Prince with God, or governed by God. But here, this is not the name that is used. It's the God of Jacob. You could say the God of the deceiver, the God of the one who's still scheming his own plans, the God of the one who is pursuing God, but imperfectly. This is the God who is still our refuge. And I love how God is somebody who isn't waiting for people to be perfect before they come to church. God brought church to them. And here, God invaded the life of Jacob and said, I'm going to be transforming you, changing you, and making you from Jacob into Isaac. And it's exactly what Jesus did when he came. In John chapter 1, we have Jesus coming, and in verse 46, Nathanael said to his friend, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" He didn't believe that the Messiah was going to come from a place like that. And Philip said to him, "Come and see." And Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there was no guile or deceit." And Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Now, I don't know if Jesus is really saying, "You are an upright and honest man in everything that you do." I think he is probably saying this prophetically, like he is saying this of Jacob here in the Old Testament, whose synonym for Jacob's life is deceitful. But you're going to become a person who will be Israel. And Nathanael is going to be a person who God is going to turn into a true Israelite, someone in whom is no guile. And the way that was going to happen is through his faith in Jesus. Nathanael says to him, "You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." And Jesus answered and said to him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, you believe me? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Most assuredly, I say to you, hereafter you shall see that heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." And what Jesus is claiming there is that I am the ladder. I am the gateway between heaven and earth. I am the one who's going to bring peace between God and man. And when I do that, one of the extensions of that peace between God and man will be peace between man and man. And so in this chapter, we see a broken family. But as a result of God making peace with Jacob, when Jacob comes back from Haran, guess who he makes peace with? Esau and the rest of the family. And so there's a healing of that brokenness in that relationship. We're going to close there. A couple questions just for you to think about. Is there anything in your life that you are chasing right now, that you're in pursuit of? Esau and Jacob were both chasing something. For Esau, it was something that he should have realized, this belongs to something else, someone else, not myself. Jacob, and what he was chasing, he needed to trust in the Lord in his pursuit. And realize that God has good things for us. But we need to go about the pursuit of those things in God's way, God's timing, God's plan. So I'm going to close in prayer, and then we'll end with one song. Lord, we thank you for your word tonight. We thank you that you're a God who takes imperfect families. You're a God who takes Isaacs after they've drifted and Rebekahs who are trying to undercut their husband and Esau's and Jacob's who just are not on the same page or not cooperating with your plan but just trying to pursue things their own way. And you enter that mess and you break into it and you start to bring healing and correction. You discipline. You allow us to experience consequences, but you also sometimes soften those consequences so that they're not quite so hard. And I ask that you would help us, Lord, in our lives, just to allow you to have that space, that we would be like Jacob and not see and realize that when we sin, we're not on probation, that you want to enter our mess, and that you're God who takes us and you transform us from Jacob to become an Israel. And whatever we are seeking or pursuing in life, Lord, I pray that you would help us to not use illegitimate means for those ends, but that we would wait on you, that we would trust in you, that in our families that there would be surprises, but that there wouldn't be secrets. And that where there is a breakdown of communication within families, there wouldn't be a breakdown of communication with you. We would take those problems and we'd lay them at your feet, and knowing that you're a God who sees and you're a God who's going to work. So we thank you, Lord, that you allow just the imperfections of your people to be recorded so that we can be reminded that you love us as we are, but you don't want to keep us as we are. In Jesus' name, amen.